show's over. Turn it back around. Probably something more interesting over that way.
But Arbiter friend?
Thank you. Oh, it's still warm.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Not!
I'm sorry. Did you mean to suck?
But Arbiter friend! This crap!
Arbiter, you are my hero.
Chief, you may be the dumbest best man I've ever met.
You had me the hero, huh? Well, now you're dead. Now you're a dead hero. And you're actually forgotten. I can't even remember your name.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Halo Lorecast. It's been about a week, and I think this is kind of going to be the schedule going forward, where it's basically I've mapped out kind of how long it takes me to read some of this. Now, we're going to start with Broken Circle Part 1, and it's going to be six parts, because first off, it's me and not Tom and me doing it. And then secondly, there's a lot to cover. And I'm doing it basically by page count. And if it like rounds up to the next chapter, then the next chapter it is. If it doesn't, then I cut the chapter off short. And today we're talking about the prologue and chapter one of John Shirley's Broken Circle. John Shirley... Oh, first, before I even get started... it's like 46 pages. That's quite a bit. Before I even get started, I asked y'all on Spotify what I should call you. Some of you had some pretty good responses. Let's see. Riot Price said, your fateful wart wart warts. JK, do ODSTs or maybe your Arbiter friends. Michael Perez says, Spartans has been great so far. So it's either Spartans or something else. We haven't really figured it out yet. If y'all want Spartans, just let me know. Just look at these episodes, scroll down, and there should be a poll with a questionnaire down there because I like interacting with y'all because I know some of y'all don't have Twitter. Why would you have Twitter? So, Broken Circle by John Shirley. John Shirley, I don't think, has another Halo book, at least that I'm aware of. The official synopsis on the back says, centuries before the Human Covenant War would rage across the galaxy, a similar conflict erupted between the Prophets and the Elites, two alien races at odds over sacred artifacts left by powerful forerunners who disappeared eons ago. Although they would eventually form a stable alliance called the Covenant, there are those on both sides who question this fateful union. From an elite splinter group rebelling against the Covenant during this time of its founding, to a brave prophet caught in the machinations of new leadership, to the root of betrayal that would ultimately shatter the Covenant many, many years later, this is the untold chapter of the most unexpected heroes emerging from a realm filled with shocking treachery and ceaseless wonder. So, with that kind of being said, we do have some background, and I feel like people coming into this book, if you've never read this book, that's perfectly fine if you're coming in here for spoilers. Maybe you're the type of person that's like, man, I can't read 450 pages of gob-stopping world-building, packed-to-the-brim world-building, barely any action world-building, and I don't really feel like getting invested in that. If that's you, that's completely fine as well. You can come here and listen to whatever. It's your time, specifically. But I do feel like there needs to be background on this book, because I opened this book, and as a guy who's learning Halo lore, casual's the wrong word, because I'm reading the books, and I own all the books. But as a guy who is finally investing himself in the entire Halo lore, I feel like starting this book off with no context kind of screws you over. The writing style is almost very similar to the Forerunner Saga in the aspect of, like, we're going to take it down, we're going to breathe, we're going to world build drastically. And this book is going to survive on its characters and worlds alone, at least thus far, 46 pages in. And it is not a slog. I'm not going to say that because I'm not going to poo-poo on anybody's writing. But it is just, it's so slow, and it's also demanding from the reader, because the reader kind of has to know some of this stuff. And I don't know if they reveal some of this stuff later in the book. And if they do, that's perfectly acceptable. However, I do feel like this book needs to be prefaced. Like, the prologue opens up with the Prophets, and, or the Sanshion and the Sanheili, almost duking it out. Two very specific ones, One happens to be a San Shion name, McCann. I'm going to fuck up some of these names. And the elite, or the San Shion, is called Usa Zealous. And there's a lot of names in here, and I wrote down as much as I could. But that's kind of the prologue. And the prologue, more specifically, is the San Shion and the Sangheili basically in battle with each other. And as somebody who doesn't really know Covenant history, I was sort of kind of lost. So, to preface, I have the new Halo Encyclopedia, 2022 edition. I also have Warfleets, Halo Warfleets, because I was hoping they gave me more information on the Dreadnought, which they did not. And I also have Halo Mythos, which provided basically the same stuff the Encyclopedia did, but just a little bit less. So if you, and I'm going to basically read all these books simultaneously with some of the stuff I'm reading to kind of complement along. Like, I know, for example, the Halo Encyclopedia kind of revealed the nature of the rookie's name. And we might hop into that when we get to ODST and I think New Blood. I think that's when the rookie croaks, as far as I'm concerned, I think. But I think I'm going to follow along. If you're really interested in learning more about it, I think Halo Mythos is a great read for newcomers popping in. And these book summaries, these analyses, whatever, they're basically going to be straight for, like, people coming in, newcomers. You know, and if you are already aware of the lore and you're looking for something to supplement that, that's perfectly fine. But I think the demographic is pretty much people who don't know any of this stuff. And they might know some things in context, but they don't know the whole package. I think Halo Mythos would be perfect for you. I think it's on sale on Amazon for like $25 right now. Also, the encyclopedia is huge, and that's on sale right now. It's usually like $50. That was like maybe $30. And Warfleet, it's pretty cheap and it's pretty simple. Basically takes you the designs of all the ships, the defense machinations of the ships, Promethean, Covenant, Human, all those different things. But I am on the Covenant page of the encyclopedia. So it kind of starts with the San Shion almost like accidentally fucking themselves. Of course, all these species were replanted. And a lot of them were replanted where Forerunner technology or Forerunner relics were kind of predominant, and they were there. And because of that, these creatures evolved into such a capacity where it's like they evolved for this sense of wonder, and they had to explain the stories, and they had to really know. It's very human for us to want to know what happened. And so it started with the San Shion. God, I hate saying that. San Shion on Janger Quom. And that's their homeworld. And their people were completely split because there was a Forerunner Dreadnought there. And there were two different factions, two different ideologies, which were the Stoics, the San Shion, who didn't want to mess with the technology, kind of stood back at a distance. And then there were the Reformists. And the Reformists were like, no, let's go in. Let's kind of look at things and, you know, figure things out. And this led to a bloody civil war, a massive bloody civil war called the War of the Wills. And this war got so bloody and so bad, the Reformists were backed into a corner and they were like, you know what, let's just go into the Dreadnought. They go into the Dreadnought and actually get it fired up, which is actually insane. And they take off from the planet and then they basically roam the galaxy, which is bonkers. It's bonkers. And in 938 BCE, they arrived on Ogathon, a world that they kind of believed nobody was there, and they ran into the Sangheili. And everything was fine and diplomatic until the San Shion told the Sangheili what their plans were. And their plans were basically to use the tech, to study the tech. They wanted to excavate the tech, and they noticed the Dreadnought. And that didn't really go so well. Actually, the Arbiter Venma Togod beheaded the whole entire delegation and sent their bodies back to the ship. And the ship was met with great Sangheili resistance, and they were no match. And it came to this point where the leader in charge of the Sangheili, and the Sangheili were being eviscerated on all Sangheili homeworlds, and it was just, it was a massacre, it was bloody, to where the leader of the Sangheili basically thought to himself, well, hey, let's use the Forerunner technology, let's pay a little bit of it back, and let's run a mission to where we kind of expose them as fraud. So they somehow get into the Dreadnought, kill thousands of Sam Shion, and they are ultimately defeated, but that kind of brings up some distrust and some questions about the leadership that is running the Dreadnought. But the Sangheili came to the conclusion that they were going to use Forerunner tech and basically battle it out with the Sam Shion, and it went the way they expected. It was basically a stalemate. Both of the leaders starting the war had basically been killed. One was the Sangheili leader was assassinated for his heretic views, and the Sam Shion leader was basically murdered and overthrown to basically put an end to all of this war. And this is what was called the War of Beginnings, the Sangheili Sam Shion War. And that's what kind of forms the writ of the Union, where it's basically the Sangheili were like, listen, we'll be in charge of the military. You have to adopt our language, but you have to retire the Dreadnought, which they did. And it became the energy source for their holy city, High Charity. And then, of course, along the way, they, you know, find the Hergox. They find other Forerunner tech. They, you know, they find Ungoys and all of that kind of thing. But that's kind of the precipice, or at least the knowledge that I feel like you need to get into the prologue of this book, because it does leave a lot of wondering, and you might not want to wonder too much because this is a pretty big investment. And that's just kind of the beginning to the prologue, because the prologue to me, I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, okay, that's interesting. There's elites there. There's a prophet there. They're fighting each other. Interesting. Which even to the point where McKen, you know, saw that Usa Zelis was a high value target. He seemed like he had leadership, and he was going to mark him for assassination because he was basically burning elites alive with sentinels, which, again, is just this horrific thing. That's just terrifying. Imagine, you know, you're protecting these relics that you have grown up to cherish your entire life, and here comes a part of that just to burn you alive. And he decides not to for his own various reasons. And he gets basically counterattacked. And it has a passage where it says basically he has to retreat to the Dreadnought. And I'm like, what Dreadnought? What are we talking about here? But put into context, it's the Forerunner Dreadnought. Because this is during the War of the Beginnings. And it's not like the prologue specifically states, you know, prologue, Sam Shion Sangheili War. That's what it says, but you have no context to it. Skirmish of the Planet Blue and Red, circa 1860 BEE, the first age, BCE, first age of conflict. And then eventually it goes into the Age of Reconciliation, which is the third age. So again, background would have helped. I just think it's just completely fascinating how the entire conflict is the thing I'm more fascinated in than the prologue. But chapter one kind of put my mind into this weird, okay, we're back to the Forerunner Saga level writing, which isn't a kick or travesty or anything like that. It's not even a criticism, honestly. It's just a thing I was not expecting. I was like, all right, we're going to get into some books like The Fall of Reach or something, because I love that book, and we're not. We're here. And again, that's fine. But I have to express some sort of, like, dissatisfaction, like, just disappointment, because I had different expectations. But the first chapter is an incredibly long chapter, basically setting up a whole bunch of stuff. Basically, Usa Zelis and the Sangheili have this rebel group who doesn't necessarily like the Covenant, doesn't want to be a part of the Covenant, because they recognize, potentially, that the prophets are full of shit. And Usa Zelis is the strong individual with the love of his life, Soon. and he's guiding these people to the best of his ability to try to avoid now the incriminating covenant, because it feels like they're so ever encroaching. It feels like no matter where he goes, there's just a million spies. You know, there's no delegation. There's no thinking it through. That's exactly what's happening here. Like, we have an informant. We have to find the informant. And opposed to McCann, where in the beginning it kind of seems like he's this heartless thing, and I've read ahead a little bit, and he's not necessarily. He has valuations, and he has needs and wants that typical humans do, and it's completely understandable. You know, one is delegating for their freedom, and the other is delegating for their choice. We'll get to that in part two. But some of the characters you have, for example, let's see. The Prophet of Inner Conviction, Lord McCann, High Lord of Sacred Relics and Minister of Relic Safety. So this is an individual who's Prophet of Inner Conviction, and I didn't look this up. This is all coming from my head because the Covenant likes to name individuals and have titles that are pretty self-explanatory, and this book kind of points that out in a kind of funny way. He's basically a guy who maintains conviction within the covenant. He's kind of the guy to set the record straight in a way. But the interesting part is he's so unsure about his own convictions. Like, for example, on page 23, there's Loro Okenyo, Jesus, talking. And he basically says to McCann, "It is so, Minister. We are all ready to die for the great journey. Always have the Sangheili revered, the forerunners. And now we know at last just how clearly hear the true word of the forerunners and obey it. We are purified in the light of the rings." And it says here, McCann wondered, as he did every day, if he himself was purified within. If he himself was utterly convinced. He was the Prophet of Inner Conviction because of the intrinsic purity he had once preached. He was hearing his own sermonizing echoing back. But increasingly, as he studied what could be gleaned from forerunner machines and records, he wondered if the true purpose of the halos was indeed a mass propulsion into a higher plane, a great journey to the paradise foreseen by the prophets. It was true that the ring seemed associated with a purification process, but what exactly had they purified and how? So he's doing the important thing normal people do, which is to ask questions, right? But he's not asking them aloud because you can't do it. And that's something interesting about religion or the covenant in general. Now, if you're religious, I'm not religious. This isn't poo-pooing on you. But historically, humans evolving in such a capacity from primitive beings to, you know, in 1945, dropping an atomic bomb on Japan and literally holding, you know, the power of a god in their hand, or at least on a plane, how humans evolved and how religion and fairy tales have kind of revolved around that, and how many governmental policies or mass wars have broken out over this idea of something we can't logically prove. And the incessant thing about it is we didn't have the means to know that, because if we look back now, there's no historical record of when it really all began. It was hearsay, passed down from here, passed down from here, passed down to here, based on our interpretations and our experiences. Baptist, Southern Baptist, Catholicism, Christianity. So you have all these different sects within a sect, and it's just interesting how we interpret it. But the difference between us and the covenant is the covenant had all the access right there. The difference is that they're they were so primitive that they misunderstood the translation, and now there's this great journey that they're just trying to get into without understanding what it is. And you have the Prophet of Inner Conviction. Inner conviction. Conviction is the belief, like the belief without proof, right? Like literally, what's the definition of a, let's see what the definition, I don't want to sound like a dumbass. Definition of conviction. Definition of conviction. A formal declaration that someone is guilty of a criminal offense made by the verdict of the jury or a decision of a judge in the court of law, aka a firmly held belief or opinion. So, like, he's acting as a guy who's firmly convicted of his belief of this almost ideology that he himself questions from time to time. Not necessarily because he doesn't necessarily believe in it, but because there aren't any there aren't as many answers as he likes there. It's almost as if, like, you're in a safety meeting or a briefing at your job, or maybe you're in a manager's meeting or whatever have you. And, you know, like, for example, I'm a safety coordinator at my work, at my job. Of course, like, my first foremost, my job is inventory manager, the guy in charge of $100 million of product. But on the side, I'm a safety manager. And it's one of those things where I'm like, if anybody has the floor to, if anybody has any grievances, here's the time to air out your grievances. And that's basically when I zone out. It's kind of like that. Somebody's talking about the right thing to do, and you just kind of zone out, because not because you think that they're wrong, but because, like, you've been in this little rodeo before. And that's kind of the position he's at, where he doesn't say it out loud. But what we see in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, there's some little tidbits in there that kind of opens that up a little bit wider, which I think is a little bit interesting, because he didn't assassinate Uzza Zelus in the prologue for his various reasons. So that's one of the things. I find McCann, like, an incredibly captivating character thus far, though not that much is happening. And Uzza Zelus, of course, another interesting character. So here's some of the characters we have in the opening chapters. Of course, we have, you know, the Prophet of Inner Conviction. Then we have Corlum, the Minister of Relative Reconciliation. Fascinating title. Gujon, the Minister of Kindly Subjection, which that almost seems like an oxymoron, kindly subjection. Because subjection almost, like, subjection by nature is force. And kind for it. It just seems like an oxymoron. Uzza Zelus, previously commander of the Sangheili armed forces during Red and Blue, which we get in the prologue. Sulan Zelus, Usa's mate, Ernica Scarmaker, has a dope name and is basically the protector of Uzza Zelus. Pretty cool. Quillic, aka Krekka, the one who founded Krek. So Sulan and Uzza are on the planet Krek. They give a brief description, and this is kind of hilarious. And it says, basically, the planet Krek, named after the guy Krekka, who basically found the planet, yada, yada, yada. Four pages later, there's Krek. It's just, it just cracked me up, because I'm like, oh. It's almost like, cracks me up in The Rise of Skywalker, where it's like, Chewie dies. Oh, he's not dead. Never mind. It's kind of like that. It had that feeling to it. But Uzza and Sulan are basically trying to find their informant named Quillic. And they go into some really fascinating history about, like, almost like workers' rights, where they're in a factory and it's molten hot and none of the factory workers basically want to be there, where the rumor was is that Quillic died a couple days ago from a workplace environment. So they're theorizing that maybe the Covenant had them killed and there are spies everywhere. But it's interesting to think that aliens have the same kind of thoughts that we have, where we're like, hey, maybe, you know, this work environment's kind of bad. You know, we can't put AC in here based on this, this, and this. Like, that was the thing that caught my eye more than anything, and I think that's fascinating in itself. But they wind up going through this town, and Sulan makes an offhand comment. It's like, yeah, when we were walking the other day, I saw this old fuck following us, and I didn't think anything of it because he was decrepit. And they get into the hangar bay, and they're about to launch off, and they run into Quillic, their unseen informant. There he reveals himself as Krek. Now, what's interesting about Krek is he's like, why are you here, old man? What are you doing? And he's like, man, many cycles ago, many eons ago, I was basically escaping, right? And I came across this completely metal world. And of course, they think he's insane. Of course, the Master Builder had ideas for the Halo to eviscerating all species, sentient species, to protect them from the Flood. And the Ur-Didact pretty much was like, we should use shield worlds. That might work. So there are shield worlds out there. And he comes across the shield world, and there's a portal on the other side of it, which is fascinating. Who put that portal there? Why was it there? Maybe I'm looking too much into that, but that's interesting. And he goes to the portal, and he basically gets met with a monitor who wants to study him. And he basically takes off, scared shitless for his life. And he basically tells him, hey, there's life there, there's everything there, and I want to go again before I die, because this is probably my last trip anywhere. And they're like, wow, this is really fascinating. We can take our little rebel faction group, go there and kind of live there free and be away from the Covenant and be protected. And that's kind of the first seed that's kind of planted inside his mind, you know, from Krek himself. And then we also get introduced to this other Sang Heili, who's matching up to be maybe one of the most, like, anticipated characters for me, Tursa. Tursa is a Sang Heili who went through some terrible experiences where they basically eviscerated everybody she was around, all of her people. And because of that, she doesn't want anything to do with the Covenant. So she's there, and she's basically around, where is it at? There's a little passage in here, which I think becomes somewhat important later. Commander basically says, you youngling, go back and organize the weapons. I'll bring you news soon enough. Yes, Commander. There's obviously a very strict, not only hierarchy, but kind of, of course, Tursa is a man, so I messed that up. There is, like, almost this patriarchal society to the Sang Heili, where it kind of shows some cracks about how they view others and respect others. They're very proud. And they remind me of boomers a lot. They talk a lot, but they're not decrepit, and, you know, they don't alienate the other generations. Okay, anyway. And Tursa says, Tursa hurried off, slightly annoyed to be called a youngling, and wondering if Usa had recruited the soldiers they needed for the revolt, or if he had some other plan entirely. With Usa, one was never knew what was coming until it had already been decided. And then, basically, Ursa tells the Scar Maker that they need to leave this world and that there's another planet. He's not telling anybody where they're going. You just got to trust me and follow me. And Scar Maker makes a pretty good point. He says, listen, there might be spies amongst our ranks, so I don't know if we can go with spies amongst our ranks. And he's like, that's a really good point. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a speech, right? And then you're going to basically follow my 6 o'clock, right? If I go take a shit, you're going to follow that. If I go get Sonic, you're going to follow that. If I want to watch a movie, you're going to follow that. And basically, just get ready for some shit to pop off. And he makes his little speech. I will not read the whole speech because it's long. Unless you want me to. Should I read the whole speech? Basically, hold your eggs in your hands, women. Men, hold up your weapons. It says, we will go quickly. I have a means to which to strike those loyal to the Covenant. I will strike at the High Clans who would force us to crawl for the San Shion. Then we will take up to the skies. We will conceal ourselves in the dark places of the galaxy, and we will create the new Sang Helios. We will restore the pride of our people. We alone will embody its pride. We alone will fight for its pride. Clansfolk, do your hearts beat with mine. With your hearts, do ours thunder. And he basically, you know, puts eggs in little baskets, which is a sign of respect. And, like, a lot of people don't do that. And there was one Sang Heili who basically asked, hey, where are we going? And Usa says, you wish to know if it is near or far from Sang Helios? It is indeed far, but I will not tell you or anyone where it lies. I will guide us there. I will say only that we must go there immediately, for I take an action that cannot be reversed. This cannot wait. It says, Verticus made a resigned hissing sound, the equivalent of a Sang Heili sigh. And then blurrily fast, he snatched the sword from the crate, slashing viciously at Usa's throat. He snarled, truly, this cannot wait. But Ernica the Scarmaker was suddenly there, leaping in front of Usa, his own blade intersecting. Vernicus said, "Fools! Usa will lead you to damnation. The government is our only hope for redemption." He tried to run, but the crowd closed in around him. "Wait," Usa called. "We need to interrogate him. He might have knowledge of Jaws Flash, Talons Slashed, Purple Sangheili blood spurted, and Vernicus, attacked by 10 at once, was already torn to gouting shreds." So we're kind of seeing, not the similarities. I don't want to draw a similarity between the Covenant and, you know, the people that he leads. But it's almost as if, like, Usa Zealous is the true prophet of inner conviction. And his people will do anything for him, as will the Covenant do anything for themselves. And I think the interesting line between there is, yes, I guess they are similar in that regard. However, the two protagonists that we are this like going on this journey with, Usa and McCann, seem to have some sort of humanity, seem to have some sort of initiative and drive going forward. McCann, more will be basically announced within the next couple of chapters, but he does get more interesting. Same for Usa Zealous, because he's just the guy trying to do the right thing. And it's not that Usa's the most interesting character here. It's the conviction. It's the conviction. And how desolate some of the followers from the Sangheili can be when things aren't communicated, and what it means to be a good leader, and how to lead. And I think that's some of the great things set up in the prologue in chapter one. Again, it's very long. It is 46 pages. That's long, like, for me. You know, reading, like, for example, Star Wars, The Rising Storm, that was like 78 chapters, but it was like 5 pages a chapter. And going to this, it's different. And I'm having to adjust to Halo books again. But all in all, the prologue in chapter one was a great read once I got into the pacing of it. Like, the prose, very much like the Forerunner Saga. If you've read the Forerunner Saga, I would recommend going into this, but knowing that it's an investment, and that's what it is. It's kind of, it's very much like the Forerunner Saga. It's an investment. You have to be in it. You want to know who, like, everybody who's in that chapter, you have to be in it. So with that being said, I'm going to release part two next Wednesday as well, chapters 2 through 5. So it's basically page 47 through 94. So if y'all want to read along with me, hey, please do. That's awesome. So I can, you know, engage with some of y'all and talk about some of this stuff, because I might have missed some stuff. Something, like, I'm completely different from other people. Some things pique my interest other than other individuals. Like, some people are like, oh, I want to know how the machinations of this work. And I'm like, what is it? And I just do an analysis on a single word, or, like, you know, just anything meta or something like that. So it's silly, but that's how my brain works. I do have ADHD. So that's the prologue in chapter one. I will be back next Wednesday. I do read it, and then I do as much extensive research as I can do on whatever little thing pops up. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at Halo_Lorecast. I interact with a bunch of people, and I'm not toxic. Like, if I don't like something, I let you pretty much like it. Like, I was playing through Halo 3 and then 4 and then 5 the other day. And, like, I like Halo 4, and I was having fun with Halo 5. So I'm not a guy to poo-poo. I'm more interested, like, if Halo 5's bad, like, you know, like, 90%, 95% of the internet thinks it's bad, which is okay. If they think it's bad, I'm more interested, like, where the fuck did the Guardians come from? Why haven't we had a book on the Guardians? You know, that's what I'm more interested in. I get, like, you shouldn't have to read books to play the games. But, like, I'm that guy to want to read the books to understand the game. So I'm weird. I understand. Again, Halo_Lorecast. Also, there will be a link tree below for some other podcasts that I do if you're interested in that. MCU on Repeat. And we also have a Patreon also on that link. So if you're interested in that, hey, we do a show called Everything All at Once, which is basically anything and everything. You can go comic books, TV shows, I'm feeling sad today, things like that. It doesn't really matter. And also, look for the poll below. Have you read this? Have you not? And what should I call you? Spartans? Arbiter friends? You know, I actually just got that because it's in the intro. I did the intro like a year ago, so like I just completely lost my friend. I like Arbiter friends. I don't know. What about y'all? Let me know down below and I will read it. Again, if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, 5 stars, please. 5 stars, not 4.1. What are you guys doing? Come on. Come on. Come on. I'm putting out the good stuff for you, and I'm not talking about the Dallas Cowboys and how they're 3-1. All right. Again, I love y'all. Halo's the best community, period, ever. And I am so greatly appreciative that you take time out of your day to listen to these 20 to 40 minute episodes. Means a lot. Y'all are the reason I'm doing this. Like, I will upload the episode, check the listenership tomorrow, and I'm like, wow, you guys blow me out of the water every time. By the way, there has not been a single day from inception to now where there's been a single day with zero listens. That's insane. I think this month alone we've had 400 listens, which again is insane. You know, maybe one day I'll quit my job and do this. Y'all will be the ones to decide if I'm even good at this. So again, thank you, Arbiter friends. I don't know.